Senate Transportation Committee is now coming to order. And I apologize to those that are here because our last committee that Senator George and I are on, they wouldn't release us until they, because it's late in the set week, you know, and all that. They wanted to get through that bill. So what I'm going to do is open a public hearing on House Bill 2811A. You want to describe it?
Ma'am, chair members of the committee, House Bill 2811A clarifies the methodology for estimating the voter vote cast count, and it has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Okay. Paul Goff, Don Hefner. Thank you. You're the only one to testify for it. Tell us why we need it. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. We're in strong support of House Bill 2811. It makes a technical adjustment to the statute that governs the transfer of motor vehicle fuel tax to the Marine Board. In 1985, the legislature authorized that transfer as a non-highway use of fuels. During the early years, it was done by a survey. Estimate was calculated using a survey. After that, we went to using a federal method, a U.S. Treasury method, which hasn't changed in a number of years. And last year, ODOT pointed out the fact that it hadn't been updated, it hadn't been revised, and we agreed with them. We agreed to return to the survey method. This bill establishes that the survey method will be used as a means of estimating the gas tax in the future. It provides for certainty. It lets all the agencies know, all the agencies involved, which is the Department of Administrative Services, ODOT ourselves, lets us all know how it will be done, and it provides the basis for the future estimate. It provides that the survey will be done using an independent survey out of higher ed once every 4 years, beginning with the survey that was just completed. The revenue forecast from that last survey is the basis for a 9901 budget, which has been moved out of ways and means. In fact, it's passed the Senate and is on the House floor. And that's the reason that there's an emergency clause on this bill, because it does affect the transfer that takes place July 15th of this year. It's a good bill, makes technical changes. We request your support and moving this on to revenue so that we can finalize it. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you. Now, Revenue Department gets a report from people who ask for a refund every year.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, the refund provision was taken out in 1985 for recreational boats because the fuel tax was being transferred for their program. These revenues are used to build boat ramps, facilities to serve boaters, provide enforcement services, and other things. And so the refund provision was limited in 85, with the exception of commercial boats used for commercial fishing purposes. And they are still entitled to a refund. It's in the order of about $75,000 a year refunded to them from the fuel tax branch of ODOT. The Department of Revenue is not a part of it.
Well, the Department of Revenue is not the one who refunds them. ODOT refunds them. Oh, I see. And another question.
Yes.
So the non-commercial people do not get their refund.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, that's correct. They receive the benefit of their fuel tax in the form of programs that we provide to local governments to build launch ramps, restrooms, parking areas, and other facilities like that to serve voters. So you can't have your cake and eat it, too.
So why do you want to do a survey if you're not going to refund them?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, the survey is to estimate the amount of fuel tax that is used in motor boats by asking them how much they use on a typical day, how many days they go. Since this fuel is bought at pump, it's not possible to know with 100% precision how much you actually put into boats versus put into cars and other lawnmowers, snowmobiles, ATVs. And so, similar to the method used for snowmobiles and ATVs, the amount is estimated based on surveys. And this establishes that we'll use the survey method to calculate that estimate for transfer purposes. So it's consistent with the other modes where off-highway use is dedicated to other programs.
So you need to know the amount so that you know how much to use for improvement on marine board projects.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do it before, during the past years?
I'm Chair Senator Yee. In 86 and 87, we did it using the same method, using surveys. Beginning in 87 and 88, we started to use a federal treasury method, which had some consumption factors, and they were nationwide consumption factors. And so they weren't Oregon specific. They were based on a composite study of different state studies, and those factors haven't changed over time. There is reason to believe that efficiencies and so forth, that there are changes over time. So we think coming back to the Oregon survey method will provide us more Oregon-specific data on which to make the estimate. We support it.
How expensive do you think the survey would be?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, doing it every 4 years, the cost of the survey is probably in the neighborhood of $25,000 to $30,000, something in that
Mm-hmm. Is another question. So every 4 years gives you enough data? Because it sounds to me it's not very frequent.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, looking back over time at the survey results, they have been remarkably consistent, even using the federal method and comparing the federal method to the most recent survey. As a percentage of total, it's remarkably consistent. So we think once every 4 years is an appropriate frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Economical way of doing it. And the survey people at Oregon State have agreed that that's probably a fair basis for doing it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay, then we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2811A and open a work session on House Bill 2811A. And just so the rest of you know what's happening, this bill has a wonderful relating clause.
Oh.
If you wanted to step in the gas tax and send it out to the people. That's a wonderful, but we're not going to do any of that.
Yeah.
He's breathing extra relief here if we move his bill out. So I moved House Bill 2811A to the floor, to revenue. With the due pass. Is there any discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator Jones?
Aye.
Senator
Yee? Aye.
Senator Shaw?
Aye. Then the bill is moved to revenue. Well, they still could stuff it. This closes the work session on House Bill 2811A, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2895. And Paul Phillips and Candy Cato and Sean Miller, would you like to come forward? Wait, you want to tell us about the bill, ma'am?
Well, House Bill 2895, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We heard last week, it deals with the contract issues of cross pay and
good topic.
And we have some amendments that the party set together on. That's the dash 15, which you have talked to before. We got this right before coming.
Yes, walk us through them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent plumbing and electrical contractors as well as the building trade and its employees. We're here today with Cindy and Sean representing a coalition of groups that are in support of 2895, the A15 amendments. Those amendments deal with two primary issues, prompt pay and bid disclosure. If you remember the amendments that were, or the discussion that was before you, you had subcontractors and contractors last week. We have amended the bill, and I'll deal with those issues separately and quickly for you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The first real issue here is that Pompeii, the first section of the bill, and it really calls for people to be paid within 30 days or a 10% interest charge can be set forth. If individual subcontractor, first year contractors want to receive a copy of the invoice or payment order, they can request that and will have to request that in writing. If after 60 days they aren't paid, they can complain to the Construction Contracting Board. There's a due process within CCB. If indeed they haven't paid and they're found that way, they can be on a non-qualified vendor's list for 6 months or more. The interest rate that we put in this bill is 3 times the discount rate, which today would be less than 18%. Current statute requires 1.5%, which is 18%. The reason we did that on the House side, and we would hold strongly to that over here, is it reflects the true cost of money rather than a cap at just 18%. But we did put in the bill a 30% cap rate.
Paul, what is the discount rate today?
At our last meeting, that would have been approximately 13.56% would have been the interest rate. I didn't calculate it today, Senator. The interest rates have been moving rather in interesting fashion, so I just forgot to check for you. But essentially, what we agreed to do and put forth in the Senate, the House agreed to, was rather than an arbitrary 18%, take the discount rate times 3, which is standard practice. We would not get paid as much interest now, but in times of economic downturn, people wouldn't play the float, and in fact, the true cost of money could be 24, 26, 28%, and you would actually get paid that much. Doesn't happen very often, but when it does, we wanted to reflect that in the statute. Because of concern raised by Senator Durfler, we put a 30% cap in there so it wouldn't go beyond that point.
Is it capped at 30%? Oh, not to exceed.
Not to exceed 30%.
Oh, I see.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up question.
Yes, ma'am.
So when you say 13.56%, the day you talk about the negotiation, so 3 times that would be close to 40, right? Capped at 30.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Vice Chair, perhaps I wasn't clear. The total of last week's hearing would have been 13.5. So it was three times 4 point whatever it was that day.
Oh.
It's running at between 4.5 and 5 now. So it would be less than 18% now. We're willing to sacrifice that so that in times of economic downturn, it's not held against us. So it would be less than 18% now, far less than 30% now. But if you remember the times in the early 80s when interest rates were so high, frankly, people were what's called playing the float. Not very many, didn't happen very often, but when it did, it can be devastating to folks. So that's why we put it. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, you will have probably before you an amendment that says, put forth by Linda at the city, saying we want to cap it at 18%. Well, we would object to that because 18% isn't what it is right now. We're willing to sacrifice some now for future economic reasons. But they can, I'm sure, make their case and... Moving right ahead, you recall last meeting there were some concerns as to this to deal with first tier, sub tier. This deals with first tier subcontractors. However, if you're a subcontractor and you don't, you can go to the CCB and file a complaint if you're not getting paid within these period of time. We just had some contractual issues that we couldn't do more than that in the law, although next session I'm sure AGC and others may be coming forth with some suggestions on how to do that. We also said in the law that if you filed a complaint, there was a good faith requirement in there, and if I went forth and filed complaint after complaint with Senator George, and who might be applying, and I'd be his sub, he could turn around to the CCB, and I could be put on the list because of just purely filing fictitious or false complaints against a prime or sub-tier contractors that were above me. That was a suggestion to the AGC, and it's something that I think will dramatically improve the bill.
Those Where is that, what you just said?
Page 2, phone 13.
Okay, page 2. All right.
So, okay. Madam Chair, those are the
there
issues around the prompt pay. Then it goes into the section of the bills that deal with bid disclosure. You will see, I think the agency made a case on their behalf that said we needed tighter limitations, and we, thanks to Senator Durfler and others, have been meeting to try and determine what those criteria should be. Bid disclosure would apply to bids of $75,000 or greater total project cost. We would have a bid deadline for submission to the public agency between Monday and Friday at noon, and then they could provide their first-tier subcontractors within 4 working hours. So that they would, if you recall last meeting, there was some time concern about the promptness of that time. In addition, we put some criteria that it would be 5% of the project, total project, or $15,000, so we weren't going too low into the tiers, or a maximum of $500,000, so that if you had a sub, first-tier sub of $500,000 above, you would list that sub. Those, although I must admit not everybody is satisfied with those, there's a good starting point to see set forth in the statutes and move ahead. We also set forth, at the request of all parties, criteria for changing first-tier subcontractors. And that those criteria are laid out on page 13 in some length. What the prime contractor whose bid is accepted may substitute a first tier, and it goes through subsections 1 through 8. And some logical things. If the proposed subcontractor goes bankrupt, if they refuses to perform the contract, if they knew that they had to be bonded, but yet couldn't get a bond. So some pretty basic materials or criteria, including just making error bids the middle. So those criteria, I think, are exceedingly important. We were able to maintain, from my client's perspective, that just because you shopped the bid and came up with something lower, that isn't why you submit. There'd be very clear criteria. And I think we're all in agreement that those types of circumstances that I just referenced are deplorable but rare, so we don't want to have it too restrictive on the good prime contractors and subcontractors that are out there. Additionally, you'll notice the effective date on this bill is 1-1-2000, so it gives public agencies an opportunity to draft up the form changes, make the changes that are necessary, and that's consistent with other bills that are flowing through this process that would make January 1, 2000 the operative date for measures like this. I ran through those fairly quickly. They do represent a consensus opinion of all the parties involved. We were able to take the advice and make changes as were suggested by the Department of Administrative Services to make sure that it worked. With that, Madam Chair, the -15 amendments are ready to move with one slight exception. And that's on page 11, line 4. You'll see 150,000 there. The number that we have talked about that I just spoke to and we've agreed on is 500,000. So, Madam Chair, on page 11, line 4, sub B, instead of 150,000, we would ask respectfully that you put in 500,000, as with all the reasons I just described, and move the bill forward.
Okay. The Democrats have an o'clock, so that she's going to stick with us.
You need me to, for the call, move the amendment.
Okay, but do you want to say anything, or just good bill?
everybody is a little bit uncomfortable, so that probably makes it a good bill.
Okay. Thank you for you working it out. That you don't know how much we appreciate that. Yeah, Sean Miller.
Yeah, Sean Miller representing the Associated Builders and Contractors. We also support the conceptual amendment that the committee would have to make on $500,000, support the A-15th, and move the bill.
Okay, just a second. Would you identify yourself?
Sorry. For the record, my name is Cindy Cato, and I represent Associated General Contractors.
And you're supporting the bill now. Okay. We need to. We have one more. Well, actually, we have a couple signed up. So what do you think? Because we can bring Ted back for the vote.
Do they want the bill? If they want the bill, they don't need to testify.
Well, they don't. They want to change it.
And they want to appear here.
Okay. Dugan Patty here? Does you want to testify, Jovan? No, you okay? Okay. All right. And then Linda Ludwig, she would love to testify for the cities and counties.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
They should remember that they can come back next session and blame the legislature for passing this thing. So they can relax that way.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have Bill Penhollow with me also from the Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you. Okay.
Quickly, for Senator Yee, we have concerns with the interest rate cap in the Dash 15 amendments being at 30%. It is our understanding that the intent of the bill really is to solve prompt pay incentives between subcontractors and contractors, not particularly with prompt pay incentives for public contracting agencies, whom historically are doing a good job with that. We did put an amendment forward that would put a cap rate on the interest rate at 18%. However, we would not have a problem if the existing language in statute were to remain. Let me back up and say we would not have a problem if we were not subjected to the discount of 3 times the discount rate when the cost of money was low, but continue to pay the existing 18% at that cap rate. Historically, for a little bit of background, when the cost of money was at its highest in 1981, the discount rate was 14%. At that time, the legislature increased the cap rate from 12% to 18%. Under the bill, the Angros version, 3 times the discount rate would be 42%. So the legislature at that time deemed that 18%, even though the cost of money was high, extremely high, would have been an appropriate cap rate. We would like to suggest to the committee that we look at leaving the cap or the existing interest rate as what it is currently.
Even at 18?
Correct. Madam Chair, Senator Yee.
Okay, did you have something to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And I just want to indicate that we support the comments that Ms. Ludwig made, that the current law says at a rate of 1.5% per month. We would encourage the committee to continue to retain that for public agencies and the interest rate that is paid to the contractor. Or if the committee feels that the 3 times the discount rate is the factor that should apply to public agencies as well as contractors and subcontractors, we would urge you to consider lowering the interest, the cap that is proposed in the Dash 15 amendment to something lower than 30%. I think Ms. Ludwig proposed in her amendments 18%.
Do you know how often you have to pay that?
Madam Chair, in my discussion with county officials, I have not heard of it being paid in recent times.
Okay, and what about you, Linda?
So the cities would concur with that as well.
So it's kind of a nice tool to have it high and they don't, they find a way to pay.
Madam Chair, yes, I think that we're finding that local governments are paying promptly, and maybe part of it is because of the incentive to avoid that that fee. But I think it's more just good business practice. There may be circumstances where there could be a situation develop where they did come up against the late payment, and we're just concerned how much of a penalty you would apply to the public agencies in those situations.
And what we're talking about doesn't apply if there's discrepancy over the work. This is, if the work's done, it's approved, and they didn't pay.
If we've accepted the project, then it's...
Okay, any other questions? Right. Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2895A and open a work session on House Bill 2895A.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2895A. Dash 15 amendment, also known as LC 2326-51799, and on page 11, in line 4, substitute $500,000 for
$150,000. So deleting
$150,000,
putting
$500,000.
That's correct, on line 4,
page 11.
Right. Okay. It's been moved that we adopt the Dash 15 amendment as amended. Is there any discussion?
What do we do with the interest rate that they can't seem to agree on?
Well, everybody does, but the cities and counties. I think we just waive it once and then we're finishing.
But currently the rate is only 4.5%, so even three times that is only around 13. So they shouldn't get to the 18% part. We hope not for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that the cities and counties pointed out they had no circumstances in which it would have kicked.
Yes, it doesn't hurt to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Then, is there any more discussion? Okay, then without objection, we will move the Dash 15 amendments as amended. Now,
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2895 to the floor with a due. Whoops, wait a minute. Is it amended to the floor? It is.
Yes.
With a due pass.
Okay. As amended.
As amended. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If there, Senator George has moved House Bill 2895A as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Eaton?
Aye.
I haven't received the majority of those of us here, and enough to do it. It goes to the floor with a due pass as amended in our carried bill. And this closes the work session on House Bill 2895A. But before we finish, I want to thank everybody because I know this didn't come without concessions and a lot of time and a lot of work. And so thank you for all the work you put into it. And our next meeting then is at Wednesday, and then on Friday, I just wanted people to know we will meet at 1 o'clock this Friday, our last regular meeting.
Okay.
Then the House Senate Transportation Committee is adjourned.
Okay. Good.
Okay.